Hello and welcome to the True Tales from Harrods podcast, our sustainability spin-off. I'm Martha Brown, one of our sustainability managers, and I'm really excited to be here today to host our third episode on our special sustainability spin-off series. He is a culinary director with global experience who has a love for the hospitality sector and a genuine passion for food at all levels, from fine dining to a wide variety of street food. He's also an absolute powerhouse when it comes to our area of interest, sustainability. He's passionate about integrating more plant-based meals into our lives and supporting small local producers. He's the driving force behind our food waste work and is working hard to minimise it. He is creating waves throughout the business and is all in all a fabulous sustainability advocate. If you haven't guessed already, please join me in a warm welcome to Kieron Hickey, our very own executive head chef. Kieron, how are you today? Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Martha. Great to be here. Thank you for taking the time.
We're very excited to have you here. I think let's just get started and first of all, start learning a little bit more about you and how you've ended up here at Harrods and in your current role. Did you always see yourself in the role you're in now?
Actually, there's no history of anybody in a chef uniform in my family at all. I'm the first. I had always, as a child, wanted to be working through my teen year, wanted to be a pilot. So I actually, when I was quite in my mid-teens, I went to a local five-star hotel to wash dishes to raise money to pay for my flying lessons, and subsequently got trapped in the industry. The flying went out the window and I ended up transferring from a pot washer into an apprentice chef. Which I loved. I loved the excitement in the kitchen, the creativity. And it's been that ever since for a very long time. I've never looked to do anything else.
Gosh, that's amazing. Yeah. So no pilot's license on the side then?
I did keep it up on my days off, yes, I have to say. But, you know, with the whole hospitality industry, finding time off is not always the easiest thing, but, especially at the junior levels. But yeah. No, kept the passion alive, I have to say.
We'll have to get you helicoptered in the mornings.
That would be great, yeah.
So any advice that you'd give to your younger self, kind of starting in that kitchen, from what you know now and looking back?
Wow. I really think that probably the single biggest piece of advice I give myself would be to write everything down. I think that in our industry, food is a little like fashion. Things come and go in waves. And when we consider that a fad or a trend has passed, a lot of these classic basics tend to make a reappearance at some point. We certainly see that now where there's a sort of a... We had a pretty bad molecular trend for a while there where food was becoming a little bit unrecognizable. And I think now with the whole sourcing piece and people having, essentially our guests and customers having a much higher focus on where we source our ingredients and how that those ingredients are treated and transported, I think that's flipped a lot of that sort of those trends on their head. So that advice I would give is essentially write everything down. Obviously, it was a different time then. We didn't have phones to take pictures of food, but it certainly would have been a huge help, I think, in that respect. But I'm just quite fortunate that I was able to transfer my early experience in kitchens into jobs in different parts around the world in different diverse locations, and that led me ultimately to here, which is into Harrods, which is among people in the industry is one of the most highly regarded food operations, certainly in the UK, and is known internationally. I mean, you never have to explain to anybody where you're working. Although I did have a message from somebody in the US yesterday saying, Kieron, are you at the London Harrods? And I wrote back and said, sorry, unless there's another one somewhere I don't know about. But it's just in the chef world, the role at Harrods has always been really highly regarded as one of the larger, most prestigious roles in the food world. So certainly I'm glad that my background overseas and in different locations has led me to this.
Whereabouts overseas did you work before coming here?
My last job before I joined Harrods was in Japan. I was in Tokyo. Unfortunately, I parachuted into the middle of COVID, which didn't work out very well. And I went there for the Olympics, and the Olympics didn't happen. So between one thing and the other. But prior to that, I'd worked. I was lucky enough to have a job with Hilton at their corporate office prior to that, where I had responsibility for Europe, Middle East, and Africa for culinary operations, which brought me everywhere. So there was a great deal of travel and a huge amount of exciting destinations to get to. But prior to that, I had worked for Four Seasons for a long time. I worked in the Caribbean for years with them. I worked in Istanbul, New York, ended up for 6 years in Seoul, which was very exciting, and got to travel a lot in Asia and experience all of that. And then I had done small pieces in different locations, like Berlin. I did a while in Jerusalem, which was incredibly exciting. The food culture in that city is just remarkable. So I've been fortunate to transfer a lot of that experience into the role in Harrods.
Gosh, that's amazing. Yes. Yeah, really interesting. So I guess you mentioned there a little bit about COVID and reflecting on the last couple of years. What are some of the changes that you've seen kind of within the hospitality industry and the challenges it's faced?
I think the biggest change is that previously, people would come in as an apprentice and they were quite willing to work without questioning their hours or questioning their trajectory on their career path. The new generation is a lot more, in my experience, focused on, what are you going to teach me? What is my day going to be like? What will I be doing in a year from now? What will I be learning? And how are you helping me along my journey? So right now, we have to have a much smarter view on, when people come in, on personal career trajectories and how we manage that and how we develop them. What are we doing outside of their day-to-day role? So now we just really focus on development, training, experiences for people and so on. And that's the single biggest change, is that you have to offer those kind of experiences to people. They're not simply just going to take a job and come in and, I'm not going to say ask any questions, but just get on with it. It's a different culture. You also have here now, you can have up to 2 to 3 different generations in one kitchen, and you need to manage them separately. You have an 18-year-old who will react to you completely different than a 45-year-old who's got, you know, his own preconceived ways of working. But you need to flex your style to communicate equally to those people, you know?
And there's a huge amount kind of kitchens in Harrods, isn't there? I guess for everyone who doesn't know, there's a lot of that goes on behind the scene. I don't know if you want to.
We do. We have, and I'm not sure that everybody realises that. Obviously, Harrods has an incredible reputation for the food halls and for as being a food retailer around the world. But I'm not sure that everybody realises that we have 26 restaurants of our own within Harrods itself, and another 5 externally that we run and manage and operate, and we have several overseas operations that we also developed and operate. So it is a busy operation in that respect. There's a lot of opportunity for change within your kitchens. When you join Harrods, you're not always going to be working in the same place, and we run a multitude of restaurants, some with partnerships with big name brands and some with big name chefs and some of our own design. So yeah, it's an incredibly busy operation and a lot happening at any given time.
Yeah, lots and lots. And I know kind of within the next sort of 6 to 12 months, maybe even more is happening. What do you think kind of the focus will be on looking forward?
I think the focus is on growing our restaurant footprint within the business, and also building up the structure that supports that operation. Because, I mean, obviously, as the chefs, we're at the coalface, the front line, we're cooking the dishes. But behind us, there's an enormous support structure of supply chain, human resources, engineering departments, training departments, and so on. There's a lot of, cross-functional work that needs to happen to get that dish onto the plate or to get that meal onto the plate. So our focus for the next couple of periods is really to look at growing out the structure that we have to support the restaurants, and secondly on hiring the absolute best people that we can find and developing them, training them, and making sure they feel part of what's happening here. We have several new restaurants, including one particularly large opening this year, and then plans for several more next year. So we just make sure we get ahead of that curve and make sure that the team is ready to support those changes that are coming our way.
Absolutely. And within the business as well, we're having a big shift kind of towards sustainability, hence us being here today and
yes,
recording this podcast. And as I said previously, you are a huge advocate for the work that we do in terms of kind of the food waste and looking at kind of getting the food to table and things like that. So what does sustainability mean to you in terms of your role? And can you talk us through some of the changes that you've seen throughout your career?
Well, I think obviously it's become... I don't want to say it's a buzzword, because it's past that at this point. It's embedded into our industry, and anybody who's ignoring it and not addressing it is foolish. As a food industry, we're obviously one of the largest consumers in general of product, and we're also one of the largest generators of waste. Because clearly there's waste that's produced in the pre-dining stage, in the production stage. There's waste that has to be managed there. And there's also waste that's generated when the food is served and the food is sold. there's ultimately going to be some waste that has to be managed. So our role, as we see it, is really to make sure that we have a clear understanding on both those areas and how to minimize what happens in both of those. Our biggest impact is in pre-production and in the development stage, where before the food actually gets to the plate or gets to the restaurants or gets to the outlets or gets to the food halls. That's where we can have the biggest impact in smart planning, making sure that our volumes make sense, making sure that our work practices make sense, making sure that the chefs, everybody from the lowest person in the kitchen to the chaps who work with emptying the garbage cans and the guys who work with cleaning the refrigerators, that everybody is on top of and aware of the processes that every single thing impacts food waste. Everything from overcooking food and having to throw it away, for not being aware of how long something's been in your refrigerator, so you're obviously losing it before its best by date, and we're having to ultimately destroy it. Just that constant awareness of that it's an incredibly perishable commodity and we need to manage it as carefully as possible. And that's something that is embedded into all of our chefs, and we bring it up in the morning meetings, we bring it up in our walkarounds. It's something that we really focus on to minimize our impact. Also, working very closely with suppliers who share the same vision as us, mm-hmm. How they source their ingredients, how they're working with farmers who are obviously have their own ways of working that fit to our vision as well. Obviously, from a commercial point of view, most restaurant kitchens and hotel kitchens across the world have access to a varying level of ingredients that they can buy. Anybody can go for the cheapest ingredient and makes perfect commercial sense if you're willing to ignore how it's produced and where it comes from. That's not the world we live in. We're one of the most seriously regarded food retailers, not globally, I don't want to say in the UK, but globally. So people have to be convinced that we are sourcing our things incredibly carefully, that we're dealing with people who share the same vision as we do in terms of sustainability, and also people that are developing new ways of working and new ingredients that will feed into our world that might not get the foot onto the ladder of the supply chain without our support. They might struggle against larger producers who are doing a similar product at a much cheaper price point, but it's, you know, it's tasteless and it's generic and it's produced in ways that doesn't fit into our world. So that's something as chefs and that we embed into our guys is our impact is how we store, produce and cook food and further back in the supply chain, how we source it, who we work with and the ingredients that we buy has an impact on small farmers, you know, et cetera, trying to get, a ladder into the supply chain. And that's where we work really hard to find that, to make that difference.
Absolutely. So it's all about kind of supporting that kind of local. Do we have an emphasis on looking at like kind of UK-based suppliers as well, if we can?
And absolutely. Things like that? So if anything, COVID has taught us that certainly with a lot of things that we need to focus our attention inwards. Obviously, there's an international imported products and always equated to higher levels of quality. You know, this is an imported olive oil, this is an imported, and obviously some things cannot be produced here and need to be imported. But there's a huge domestic market that's grown up in producing ingredients that we should be supporting. And if it doesn't make commercial sense for us, we need to find a way to make commercial sense that we work together with cooperatives of people who supply us or going together with one distributor to supply into us. Because obviously the other part of our supply chain is we don't want 45 trucks at the back door every day delivering one box of herbs. That makes also no sense because that's adding to the problem and adding to the congestion and to the food miles. So we work really hard to consolidate a lot of our products into single sources so that we're minimizing that impact as well, the deliveries, the transportation, but also giving smaller producers a chance to piggyback large distribution routes. So that's something we're really focused on. I think that we've been fortunate. For example, we're working with we just set them up for our new restaurant, which is opening. We're working with a company called Crate to Plate, which is a company that works off shipping containers across sites in London. And they grow hydroponically grown mini herbs, mini salads, and so on. And it's basically urban farming.
Wow.
But the flavor is amazing. The taste is amazing because they're untreated, unfertilized, and they're just natural. And they're here within 20 minutes. And there's, I mean, the majority of cases, they're still growing when we get them. So this is something which we found is, these are the kind of stories where we think that we can help people like that who are working to get an impact into the business. But also it helps us because we're getting access to amazing quality stuff, yeah. You know, which tells that story of, you know.
So it sounds like you've got an eye out kind of for new innovation that's coming in.
Absolutely.
And did you say hydroponic?
Yes, and essentially they're grown in as I said, converted shipping containers under lights. It looks like a club when you get in there, and you've got all these walls of basil and walls of mini herbs growing just on water filtration systems growing right out of the wall, almost like an art installation, you know.
Gosh, that's incredible.
No soil, no nothing. They're just incredibly flavoursome. I mean, just, and the range that they grow is really, really good.
So just looking back at your career, do you think sustainability has become a lot more prevalent in the world we are in today? But do you think you've always kind of looked at that local sourcing?
Based on some of the places that I've worked, I didn't have access to a huge amount of imported ingredients. And I think that's one thing we saw when I was working with one of my previous roles, where we saw places where for many reasons, they couldn't import international ingredients, that local industries suddenly popped up to support that demand. And that's something where we've seen, like I worked for a long time in Istanbul in Turkey. And Istanbul, Turkey at that time still is, it just produces some of the most remarkable stuff. So you didn't need to go very far. And there was also, there wasn't as much emphasis on imported stuff coming in, but we did supplement our menus obviously with some ingredients that you kind of, at our level, you had to have on the menus. I mean, there's a certain demand for truffles and caviar at some point, you know. But I see that now a lot of what we had also seen happening was a great deal of people were working in a way where there was generating a lot of excess waste and creating a supply chain into basically our operations that. The minimums or the amount of volume that was coming in was just ridiculous. We were just buying tiny amounts of food from overseas that was costing a fortune in transportation, costing the environment a fortune in just shipping miles. And one of the things that we really tried to do was to go work with local suppliers. And a lot of farmers would see us and see what we were buying and then try to generate their own local industry. And I worked for many years in the Caribbean. We would have a bi-weekly supply run from Miami. And then what we generally found after a couple of years of operating in that environment, that we worked with the local suppliers and they were actually, and this is about as basic as it gets, taking the seeds of the things that we were buying and growing them. So they were taking all of the baby vegetables, all of the exotic fruits, and a lot of stuff would grow there. A lot of the... essentially the seeds when we were preparing in the kitchens, because we worked in a very small environment where the local community worked in our kitchens, and then they would bring the seeds home when they were prepping veg and grow them and bring them back and sell them to us. And we then added some investment into that to make it a bit more organized. And soon after about 3-4 years of operation, we had herb farms, we had fruit and vegetable farms that A, gave us a much fresher product, and B, reduced our dependence on shipping stuff in, which had a great cost, but the impact to the environment as well.
So amazing.
That's the kind of things where we see hospitality, large hospitality operations can have a positive impact on where they're operating.
Definitely,
you know,
yeah.
And almost creates that sustainability story by itself.
It does, yeah.
Just by out of necessity.
You know? A huge kind of ripple effect and the butterfly effect.
Absolutely.
Of it.
So I suppose what motivates us at the moment is really our awareness that as one of the larger food businesses within the United Kingdom, we have an impact on supply chains, we have an impact on waste and what's produced out of our kitchens, and that really motivates us a lot to lean back and strip back our processes as much as possible to make sure we're completely aware of every step of the inbound process, how it's sourced, how it's stored and how it's cooked, so that we're aware of there's any gaps and any risks in there, because we really want to minimize our footprint And it's not just, that's really not just a sort of a tagline to go out to the industry. That's how we operate. We have to. We have a responsibility to work that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we've been having a lot of conversations about kind of food waste and how we might tackle it. We've already got some really exciting partnerships where we donate to local food charities and food banks. And we've got some exciting partnerships coming up as well.
Absolutely.
Potential resale, which I'm sure we can talk more about later on. So how do you empower your team to come on this sustainability journey with you?
I think obviously we embed to them, and in many cases with a lot of the individuals, we don't really need to. A lot of people are coming in are already coming from a world of where they have values that they bring already into the workplace, and they in some cases choose to work at Harrods because they feel that the values align. We're focused on sustainability. We're focused on ways of working that minimize waste and minimize our impact, and also that has a huge focus on plant-based cooking, vegetarian, and obviously we're certainly in our pastry world. People like Phil, who are really doing an amazing job on leading the industry on plant-based pastries and flours, and we have really stepped way ahead of a lot of the competition in terms of that vision and that offer that we're doing. It's not an easy thing to do because plant-based pastry is almost something that's very hard to explain to people, and people will struggle to understand how can you eliminate or reproduce sugar within things and all of those classic considered excessive ingredients that you would carry in a pastry. But he's doing a remarkable job, and a lot of our team members work with us because they feel that they would want to work in an environment where they learn about that. So in that way, we bring them on the journey that they're almost, some of them are already well on the way. And the rest of the time, we just constantly work the teams in through our communications on why provenance is important, why it's actually really important that we get out a message to our customers that we care about where we source everything from. We also have, of course, our Harrods brand standards that are implemented across how we operate with our food technical team that eliminate a lot of those high-risk ingredients out of our supply chain completely. And we're constantly reassessing that and adding to it and using our teams, their experience in other restaurants, in other hotels in the industry to come to us and tell us, by the way, did you know that there's an alternative to this? And you know, we should not work with that. And we're constantly evolving. So the team is really tied into what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So a real shift in kind of the people that you're working with and the motivations
Absolutely.
Of them. Everyone's
yeah.
bringing that
Absolutely.
To the business. Yeah, yes. I'm a definite advocate for kind of collaborative working and knowledge sharing within kind of businesses and the wide realm.
Absolutely.
So what are you proud of? What have you found particularly challenging? I know, how long have you been working at Harrods now?
Actually, just over a year now.
Just, a year.
Just this week is just been over a year.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We've just started the conversation into a different level in terms of food waste, in terms of talking about how we generate food waste and how we measure it. And I know you and I have had many conversations about this and what the next steps look like in Harrods in terms of how do we leverage technology to tell us exactly where the food waste is happening, what food groups it's happening in, and how do we adjust the way we work to minimize that. And that's something where, with an operation our size, you really have to spend a great deal of time to set up those processes so that it flows. Because at the speed at which our restaurants and production kitchens operate, any disruption to that is going to have an impact on the business. But we really do need to get these systems in place to understand where the waste is being generated in our productions and address it. And we're doing a good job already, but there's certainly a lot of technology out there that will help us do that.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you feel has been like your proudest moment at Harrods?
I think that so far we've been just to start that conversation with people on the food waste awareness that we're working on at the moment. We had some processes in place, but like anything else, there's better ways to do things, and we feel, and you and I were talking about the technology that will help support us identify where the food waste is being generated and from what groups and how we can react to adjust that. I think the fact that we've just really began to raise awareness across the teams on that they're thinking twice when they're ordering, do I need this? They're going back to deal with suppliers that necessarily don't, you know, don't share our vision, and potentially we're dealing a lot more with obviously through our brand standards with ethical standards when it comes to raising animals and so on. So we're choosing to deal with those, even though it might cause us a little bit more work in administering the supply chain, but we'd rather do that than have generic products. And I think the proudest thing is that we're now, chefs are starting to stop when they're writing menus and consider what they're putting on and coming to us and saying, what do you think of this? And looking for ways to, for example, we have a huge food retail business here and a large restaurant business, and looking for efficiencies in supply chain that we're not all buying from different people, as I mentioned before, that we're trying to minimize the amount of deliveries, trucks on the loading dock, all these things that impact our world, and to see if we can find some, you know, ingredient synergies in our supply chain between our retail world and our food restaurant, our restaurant world, that that supports our sustainability story, but also lets the chefs tell their provenance story, you know, rather than, you know, a chicken, it's got a story behind it because we work closely with an incredible producer up north. The supply chain is maybe not as frequent into London as we would like, but obviously we will forego that in terms of planning our menus, but we'd rather go buy from him and have an amazing quality that we know how it's raised, we know how it's processed, and it fits into our story. So we now have a great provenance when we come to writing menus. So I suppose the chefs are spending a little bit more time just to think about what goes on menus, to be a lot more seasonal, to be a lot more aware, and to look, do I really need to buy asparagus from Chile, for example, and just to be smarter.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that we've seen a bit of a change. It's really good.
And it sounds like you're really looking at kind of the holistic nature of it. So from kind of the origins all the way through to how we then dispose of it.
Exactly. Because when the production is finished, there's also then the waste that's generated afterwards, and then we have to be part of that conversation and understand. And chefs, obviously, if it was in a perfect world, like, for example, in my house, I'll make sure that we're repurposing an awful lot of stuff, and mm-hmm. we batch cook large amounts of things that have multi-purpose uses, and also just reduce a huge amount of what we buy, the volumes, you know, mm-hmm. So that we're not over-reducing and over allowing stuff to go off that's just unnecessary, you know. And that's something that's really, we've worked hard into the operation here to get that that mindset, I suppose,
yeah,
into the chefs.
Absolutely. All right. So what keeps you busy outside of work? You mentioned before flying. Is there anything else?
Well, I picked up photography when I was quite young as well. And that's something that really keeps me active. It gets me out and about. And I really have a lot of passion for that. And it's a never ending chasing of next level equipment and new bits and pieces and technology coming our way. But that's something I really enjoy. It gives you a chance to step out completely away from the industry world and, you know, something completely unrelated to your day to day. You need that. You need that sort of balance, you know.
What's your favorite thing to photograph?
My sons and I, we go out and we do a lot of, like just this weekend, we were at a sort of a World War II reenactment, which is was up in Leicestershire, and we drove up there, where it's just one of the largest in Europe. And those kind of things where you have role playing, people in role playing, and it's essentially like being on a movie set.
Yeah.
And it was just remarkable when we spent about a day and a half up there, and that was really nice. That kind of thing we really enjoy, you know. But it varies, different things, different subjects, but I just liked getting out and about. It's really useful. Yeah.
Gosh, that sounds great.
Yes.
And who does the cooking in your house?
that's always a hot topic. The kids have this sort of breakdown that mom cooks better, but dad cooks faster. So that's kind of where we've agreed to agree on that. I still try to operate in the kitchen at home as if I'm at work, where I'm planning in advance and putting stuff. Plus, my experience, I will cook a lot faster and I'm a lot more efficient. But there's some things that I simply cannot do. So I obviously, because I'm at work most of the time, mom cooks. And we have a league table where we have the top 10 dishes that they all love and whose lasagna is better. And it's always a constant running battle. Mom owns the curry. I leave her that. That's hers. I'm not going to get into that world.
Oh.
But she does most of the cooking, bless her. Yes.
What's your your go-to dinner party dish? Do you have one?
Ooh.
I'm putting you on the spot here.
No, you're not. Not in the slightest. For a long time, it used to be, you always had to try to walk a line among likes, dislikes, vegetarians and whatnot. Risotto was always something we found worked really well with everybody. I didn't know anybody who doesn't like risotto. And the other thing that we really work, having spent a huge amount of time and the kids having grown up a lot in Asia, there's a massive amount of Asian food gets done in our house. And when we were in Japan before joining Harrods, the kid, we had, while we were waiting for our stuff to be transported, we lived in the hotel for 2 months and we had access to room service, which spoiled the life out of the kids.
Oh my goodness.
And they are just completely obsessed with anything which is teriyaki.
Okay.
Yeah. And my goal in life is to reproduce that level of teriyaki. I don't think I'm close, but that's a big go-to in our house, is anything that has that glaze on it, you know.
Oh, sounds delicious.
Yes, it is.
And do you have any sustainability practices that you've adopted in your personal life?
Well, like I said, we tend to obviously buy a lot more carefully now. And even down to simple things like not overdoing. I see a lot of times people go out to do their big shop and they buy what they think they need for the week and not really paying attention to shelf life. Especially fragile vegetables tend to go off, and you have these great plans that you're going to have a salad at some point, and the salad goes, you know, 7 days later it's gone in the bin. So we just try to be realistic a little bit about what we're going to cook and what we know. And if there is a point in the week where you feel like you want to have your salad, then you can certainly buy it that day. But I'm a big advocate of not storing stuff that you're planning, you know, as I said, doing a huge shop and then planning that you're going to have a cycle, because when both parents are working and you have a busy cycle, you want to plan your meals, you know. But you should also be aware, as I said, of shelf. So for me, it's all about fragile vegetables and their shelf life. And the other thing is just understanding staples and how they work for you. Things like pastas and rice and stuff, and how they can be one thing one day and then something else the next day. And, you know, things like red beans are big in our house, where they're in a vegetarian wrap one day and next day they're in a chili con carne the next day. And you can, you know, you can manage production. I don't want to say production of food, but certainly that's one of the things, is that just for me is not producing huge amounts and letting, because with the best will in the world, leftovers, you think, I'll come back to that. How often do you go in and say, I really want to have that mashed potato from yesterday? Because it's never going to be the same, is it?
So no.
unless you can morph it into a shepherd's pie the next day. And that's the kind of way where my brain always goes. It's spaghetti bolognese one day and the sauce, the leftover, becomes shepherd's pie the next day, kind of thing. But that's the kind of thing, just trying to be smart and be, you know, not carrying a huge amount of stuff that you think you're going to cook at some point, and being realistic with yourself that you're not going to get around to it, you know?
Yeah.
And also just being, I really started looking at where stuff's from now. And a lot of the large food retailers are wising up to that people really want to know where your stuff's from. And the avocados was a big story, isn't it? It's a huge story.
I was just thinking about avocados when you said that.
It's a really big story. Doesn't stop people buying them, but I think that people want to know. It's a bit like fair trade. Where are they coming from? Is the money going to the right people, etc.? So, and again, you can have whatever you want in some supermarkets, but if you're willing to accept the fact that it's coming from, as again, it's been on a ship for 5 days from somewhere, and it's not ever going to be at its peak, you know. So it's just smart shopping.
Yeah, definitely. And I know, kind of culturally and sustainability-wise, there's a real move to kind of meat-free Mondays, and it's a lot more sustainable to eat kind of less meat. Mm-hmm. Would you have any advice to give people on a budget who'd want to eat more plant-based friendly way?
Yeah, again, we go back to our staples a lot. So, as I said, we work a lot. In our house, we cook a lot with chickpeas, we cook a lot with beans, we cook a lot with a huge amount of rice, because there's a lot of flexibility. We've just started now cooking. We found that things like chickpeas are a great substitute for chicken. Chicken curry obviously is a huge thing for people. And in the last couple of months, I've started sneaking the chickpeas were always in there, but I've kept the chicken out.
Okay.
And it's only when the kids are having dinner and they realize, after a while, it's like, this is vegetarian. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And we then sort of made a conscious effort that we were going to do that two to three times a week if we could. Not because we were, you know, conscious overly of the amount of meat, because we're not huge consumers of it, but just we felt it was the right thing. Because in my world, there's a massive wave in terms of demand of vegetarian, vegan, which we have to address, and you can't pretend it's a fad. It's not a fad. It's the reality of the world that we live in. And that was bound to spill into my own cooking at home and our own cooking at home. And just the more facts that are made available of the effects of beef farming on the world, the effects of overconsumption of red meat and overconsumption of meat in general, it does make you think twice. So we do make a conscious effort on I suppose, using a lot more of those staples. And that's, I suppose, the advice I would give to a lot of people is to just look to switching out your proteins. There's so many other sources you can choose from. And it sounds like, you know, a lot of the time when tofu used to be such a cliche, but, you know, having spent the better part of 10 years in Asia, it's a massive staple diet out there. And you can absolutely enjoy the same consistent, there's some sort of textures if you enjoy the texture of meat, so to speak. There's a lot of alternative. You do the slightest bit of research, as I said, there's a lot of tofu. And I don't know about, there's a lot of now new products on the market that are trying to be meat without being meat. Yes. I'm not quite sure where they fit into our world. You either eat or you don't, as I see it. But I think there's a lot of alternatives now where you can find meat replacements. I'm only waiting for the prices of them to come down. The cost seems to be a bit prohibitive at the moment. But I would look at staples like pastas, like chickpeas, like red beans that will change out that protein in your spaghetti bolognese or in your curries. And that's the way we kind of approach it.
Absolutely. And if you're on a budget, it's actually probably cheaper to get a can of chickpeas.
Absolutely, 100%. It really is. Especially if you look at the price of things in the last couple of months, the way it's been going.
I know. Yes, I'll certainly be eating a few more chickpeas.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, so if you could eat anything for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
Well, boy, I always figured that my desert island food or my condemned man last meal would have to be chicken wings. I mean, that was I lived in New York for a few years and that became my go-to. And I'm absolutely obsessed on getting that right for years and years, getting the right chicken wing. And then I lived in Korea for a while where they're incredibly famous with their crispy chicken wings. And I just, for me, that is the ultimate comfort food. One of the other things that I'm really obsessed with at the moment is noodles and ramen. Obviously seen the massive demand across the market that we operate in right now, and it's certainly something we really love to see in our Harrods world. Certainly at some point in the future, because it's such a very sort of a democratic meal that I don't think anybody of any nationality that would not enjoy a bowl of noodles of the description, and the Italians call it pasta, and everyone else calls it noodles, but it's still the same basics, isn't it? So I think that's something that I'm really focusing on at the moment as well, getting that right.
So on your desert island, we're sending you off with some crispy chicken wings and a ramen.
There you go. And I had that recently, actually, in Dubai, and it was one of the best evenings for a long time. Absolutely. Yes.
So you've not got much of a sweet tooth. You're definitely a more savoury man.
I would have to say yes. I do know that in our house, there's a massive amount of baking goes on. Huge amounts of baking goes on. But no, I'm not a huge dessert person. Although working in Harrods, that makes my job incredibly difficult. Because it's 50% of my day is tastings and trying to avoid eating pastries and so on. But we're obviously incredibly famous for them here. With all the work that we're doing right now with the plant-based, I'm constantly been looking at new products and been pulled into tastings with our team. What we're doing for future afternoon teas, what's happening in one of our restaurants and developing for restaurants coming in. So it's a big part of my day. It's hard to avoid the pastries, but yes, it's not my go-to, I would have to say.
I'll take the pastry eating for you if you like.
the pastry team might argue that with you, seeing my participation in their eating. It's not subtle, I'll say at the least. Yes.
All right, fantastic. Thank you, Kieran. Thanks for coming and joining us today. And a huge thank you to you for sharing so much of your insight into how sustainability is manifesting in the hospitality part of our business. So that brings us to the end of our third episode. A huge thank you to Kieran. I found it really informative and I hope you all did too. Please do subscribe if you'd like to receive more episodes as soon as they become available. Thank you so much for listening. My team and I will be back next month with a new guest and more updates on sustainability. Have a great month. And that's it from me, Martha.